program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Audio Journal's Young at Heart. The book selections for this hour are designed for elementary and middle grade listeners. This program is supported in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. My name is Lavender, and I'm happy to be with you today. I will continue reading from the book, Charlie Joe Jackson's Guide to Not Reading, by Tommy Greenwald. Chapter 26. There are things you need to make sure you know when telling someone you did read a book when you actually didn't read the book. Number one, the title. Number two, the author. Number three, what's on the cover. Number four, how long it is, approximately. Number five, the name of the main character. Number six, the name of anyone who dies. Number seven, the names of any animals. Number eight, how long it took to read. Number nine, what happened in a specific chapter. Number 10, if you liked it or not. Tuesday morning, 11:10 a.m. You know that drop of sweat that suddenly appears on your forehead when you get nervous, and then it slowly trickles down your cheek like a tear your brain sheds because it's so sad that you got yourself into this situation? Well, that drop of sweat was about halfway through its journey when I got up in front of the class to deliver my position paper. Ms. Farrell was there, of course, but since this was the big academic event of the year, so was the rest of the English department. Mr. Sims, Ms. Cohen, and Dr. Jameson, who was obviously the most important person in the school because he was the only doctor, although I personally never saw him heal anyone. What seemed like the entire free world was also there, even though it was only the 22 other kids in my English class. I cleared my throat. If only I could have cleared the room. Hi, everybody. My name is Charlie Joe Jackson, I began in a scholarly fashion. I saw Timmy roll his eyes. Thank you for coming today. What choice did they have? My position paper is entitled From Friends to Rivals, How the Pressures Facing Kids Today Makes Them Form Cliques or Teams to Face Off Against One Another. Hold your applause. I plowed ahead. The books I read for this project are as follows. The Clique as Crutch, by Marvin S. Hackett. Too Many Clubs, Too Little Time, by Sheila Warburg. And The Modern Super Kid, by Frederick and Catherine Wilson. I took a quick glance at the teachers to see if anyone seemed like they'd heard of the books. Hoping they hadn't, of course, but I couldn't tell, so I continued. This was my awesome first sentence. It is my contention that because kids in today's society are under so much pressure to excel and they spend so much time in studies and extracurricular activities that they don't develop the necessary social skills to interact with all their peers and therefore only socialize with those with their immediate interests, leading to cliques, clubs, and other forms of separation that are ultimately detrimental to the developmental and maturation process as kids try to become adults. To run on, I presented my paper with a minimum of slip-ups, making some good points along the way. I mean, if you want to be technical about it, I'm sure I repeated the same points a few times. Who doesn't? But at the same time, I felt fairly confident that I was doing a pretty good job. In any event, I had some special surprises planned for the end of my presentation. I was saving the best for last. Up to this point, I announced, I have given a fairly traditional position paper. I read the books, did the research, wrote a thesis statement, and backed up my thesis with facts and figures. I took a deep breath. Here goes. But now, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to offer you specific evidence of how kids can fight back and worry less about getting straight A's and getting into high school honors classes, and concentrate more on getting to know all the cool and different kinds of kids around them. Because it can be done. And the most important thing is, the kids themselves want it to happen. I nodded to Timmy, and he stood up. My name is Timmy McGibney. I usually hang around with kids who like to skateboard and snowboard, but yesterday I had a long conversation with Casey, who's in the orchestra, and he was really nice. I nodded to Pete Milano, who got up smirking. I think about sports like all day, every day, but one time my parents took me to see a Broadway musical, and it was pretty good. He sat down amidst snickering from his fellow jocks. I nodded to Eliza, and she got up. A lot of kids consider me the most beautiful girl in the grade, but that doesn't mean I only want to hang out with other beautiful girls. Okay, she didn't totally stick to script, but moving on. Katie popped up out of her chair. For a while, I was a dork. Then I was a goth. Then I was a skater. Then I was a loser. Then I was a winner. Then I finally discovered who I really was. Just a girl. She grinned at me and sat down. Let's just say it. Katie Friedman is plain awesome. I snuck another glance at the teachers, who were clearly enjoying the show and tell. It was going well so far. Time for the big finish. I put my paper down on Ms. Farrell's desk as if I were done. Thank you all for listening, I said, wrapping up. I hope we've all learned an important lesson here today. Let kids be kids, and guess what? They just might surprise you. I headed to my seat to some healthy applause. I was pretty sure it was B-plus applause, at least. And then, right on cue, wait a second. Everyone stopped clapping, stopped talking, stopped everything. Hannah Spivero had stood up. Not just on the floor, not just on her chair. Yup, Hannah Spivero, the girl of my dreams, was standing on her desk. I have something to say, she announced grandly. She waited a beat for the suspense to build. She was a natural performer, it turned out, before going on. I guess by now everyone knows that Jake and I are going out. We did. When Jake first asked me out, I thought he was crazy, Hannah continued. Why would I ever go out with someone like Jake? All my friends laughed. She looked at Jake, who looked back self-consciously. But I decided, so what? Who was I to judge him just because he wore glasses and played violin and was in the chess club? Maybe I should give him a chance. She paused, milking the moment. It turned out to be the best decision I ever made. Oh man, was she good. Then Hannah got down off her desk. She walked to the front of the room, then slowly, almost ceremoniously, turned around and walked straight up to Jake Katz. I really like you, said my never-to-be girlfriend to her boyfriend, right before leaning over and giving him a kiss on his glowing, blushing, bright red cheek. The place erupted. Chaos. Pandemonium. Anarchy. Bedlam. Thesaurus.com. Check it out. Jake nearly had a heart attack. And if he had, he would have died a happy man. And right at my moment of triumph, I realized something about myself. When I came up with the plan to set up Jake and Hannah, I told myself they wouldn't actually fall for each other, yet somehow I knew it would happen. But it didn't matter. That's how desperate I was to avoid reading. I was willing to see the girl of my dreams kiss someone else. It was both the greatest and worst moment of my life. Apparently, I wasn't quite finished. Ms. Farrell shushed the crowd, which took some doing. "A very impressive presentation, Charlie Joe," she said, stating the obvious. "And extremely theatrical. But as you know, the teachers often like to ask some follow-up questions just to ensure that you have complete command of the material." "Are you kidding? Complete command of the material? Did you or did you not just see me rock this room?" "Of course," I said. Dr. Jameson went first. "Mr. Jackson, first of all, I want to tell you how much I enjoyed your paper, and I admire the topic you chose. But I am curious, which of the books did you find most helped you in your research?" Talk about a softball. The good doctor had lobbed one over the plate. I could smack this one out of the park, thanks to Charlie Joe's tip number 21. "I'm glad you asked that, Dr. Jameson. I really enjoyed all the books I read, but if I were forced to pick my most valuable resource, it would have to be Modern Super Kid by Frederick and Catherine Wilson. From the image of the four-headed child on the cover to the fascinating example of the overworked violin prodigy in Chapter 7, I found the book to be extremely compelling. I guess the best way to describe how interesting I found this book was that it was 278 pages long, and yet it went by in a flash." The teachers all nodded, and I thought I was home free until Mr. Sims said, "I remember that book." "Huh?" "Just keep nodding," I told myself. "And I concur," he continued. "The Violin Prodigy story is an invaluable cautionary tale for all parents who are thinking of overloading their children with a myriad of activities." I kind of knew what concur meant, and I had no idea what myriad meant, but I knew what all the other words meant, and they were put together in an order that made me very happy. So I nodded in agreement, and Mr. Sims smiled. Ms. Cohen was up next. "Charlie Joe, I'm not completely convinced that all the blame can be placed at the feet of adults. The children are willing participants in this whole vicious cycle. Can you please explain how the various books you've read illuminated your theories on adult pressure versus peer pressure? Are they clear in delineating the differences between the two?" "Stay calm, my young friend, stay calm. Form a quick mental image of Jake's synopsis in your mind. Ah, here they are. And go." "Well, Ms. Cohen, that's a very good question. All the books did stress how the kids are ultimately responsible for changing their own behavior, but perhaps it is best explained by Sheila Warburg in her book, Too Many Clubs, Too Little Time. She says in Chapter 3, which is entitled Taking Back Your Lives, that every kid ultimately has to make their own decisions, that they can't assume that just because their parents are adults that ultimately, every decision they make is ultimately the correct one. I was vaguely aware that I'd used the word ultimately 4 times in that explanation, but I didn't care. You do what you have to do. Ms. Farrell stood up, which was the equivalent of a get-out-of-jail-free card. Well, Charlie Joe, I have to say, you handled yourself extremely well. I'm very proud of you. Good job! I nodded and sat down. Everyone clapped again. The sweat on my forehead was just starting to dry. I started to get some feeling back in my tongue. So this is what freedom tasted like. Show of hands, who wants a short chapter? It's unanimous. Chapter 27. Katie cornered me immediately after class. You were amazing in there, she said. For some strange reason, it was right at that moment that I realized she had fewer freckles than she used to. When did that happen? Thanks, I said. We looked at each other for a few seconds too long, and suddenly it got a little weird. Katie and I have always had a mutual understanding that we're better off as friends. We were better off as friends in first grade, and we'll be better off as friends when we're 80 years old. In other words, it would never work between us, or would it? Come on, she said. You can't be serious. Like always, she knew exactly what I was thinking. I hated and loved that about her. What? You know what? She pulled me away from the kids, who were still slapping me on the back after my triumph. It would never work, you and me. We care about each other way too much. That may have been the smartest thing anyone ever said to me. I hugged her. You're the best girlfriend I ever had. She hugged me back. By girlfriend, you mean girl slash friend, right? Of course, I said, although I wasn't entirely sure. Chapter 28. I found Jake, the man of the hour, all alone in the boys' room, cleaning his glasses. That was so awesome, I said, clapping him on the back. Thanks again. You are so the man. He didn't look up. Do you think she might actually like me? He asked worriedly. I mean, now that it's over and you did the paper, do you think she'll still want to go out with me? He blinked as if he'd just woken up from a dream. A dream called Hannah Spivero. I think so, I answered. And I realized as I said it that I actually meant it. Believe it or not, I really think so, dude. I think so, too, Jake yelled, and he let out a loud whoop, whoop, and started jumping up and down, pounding on the paper towel dispenser. She likes me! She likes me! Yo, everyone, Hannah Spivero likes me! He shouted over and over again to the world, even though we were the only people there. As I watched him, the first thing I thought was, this kid is crazy. The second thing I thought was, I'd be reacting the same exact way. Part 5, Chapter 28, Plot Twist. Always be wary of the plot twist. Books with a last-second plot twist are just desperately trying to hold your attention until the last minute, which is a shame since the author could have saved us all a lot of trouble by just ending the book earlier. I've noticed that this book has changed a lot since I started it. It's become more like a book, which is not the book I set out to write. I'm not sure what happened. No one liked to admit it, but everyone looked forward to the last big social event of the school year. The name, the year-end dance, was boring and nerdy. But the ingredients, pizza, an ice cream sundae bar, and dancing close to girls were all right on the money. It was the last weekend of the year. There were only 2 days left of school, that last random Monday and Tuesday that never make any sense because all the tests and homework are done and nobody does anything but walk around saying goodbye, signing yearbooks, and giving each other hugs. The whole hugging thing has gotten pretty out of control, by the way. Now kids hug if they haven't seen each other for 3 whole minutes. And people were starting to talk about their summer plans. I was traditionally a proud summer slacker, but this was the year my parents had decided I would do something productive, like go to soccer camp or get a babysitting job, or it makes my skin twitch just writing this, take a summer school class. But that was before my position paper triumph. The pleasure my parents took in my achievement, they had finally read my paper and loved it, made me think I might be able to avoid any additional academic duty over the summer. And when I mentioned that I needed a new bathing suit, my mom didn't give me her usual, "You can go to the beach on weekends after you do your chores and read at least one complete book during the week" speech. Maybe they were proud of me. Maybe they just had given up. Or maybe it was a combination of both. But it was starting to look like the summer was shaping up to be chock full of my favorite activity. Nada. Anyway, on the day of the dance, the whole school was buzzing with anticipation, and the usual last-minute rush of boys asking girls to go was happening at a record-setting pace. As for myself, ever since the day 4 months ago when Eliza thought I was asking her, I had wondered why I would end up going with. I considered asking about 30 girls. I ended up asking Timmy McGivney and Pete Milano. I got to the dance right on time, 45 minutes late. It was dark. It was sweaty. It was impossible to hear anyone talk. In other words, it was just right. Timmy, Pete, and I were hanging out, trying to decide if we should A, ask specific girls to dance, B, join the general clump of dancers, or see, shoot baskets for a few minutes in the gym while deciding how to approach the whole dancing situation. Pete had a firm opinion. Dudes, you don't ask a girl to dance at these kinds of things. That totally pins you down. You just dive into the pile and dance with all of them at once. Right, CJ? He said to me, punching my arm. Pete was a puncher. Right, I said, scanning the crowd for a couple of faces that I hadn't yet seen. It took me a minute to find Katie, who was hanging out with her usual friends, doing her usual thing, texting them. I caught her eye and waved, and she smiled and waved back. I know, not exactly a momentous event, but it made me feel good, so I thought I'd tell you about it. Mainly because it was just about the last thing that made me feel good that night. Or ever. Another punch on the arm from Pete. Man, they should call him Pete the Puncher. Just kidding. Whoa, he said, pointing at the front door. I looked. Whoa, indeed. Coming through the door was Hannah Spivero, and holding her hand was a kid who used to be Jake Katz. You know that thing in cartoons where a character sees something he doesn't believe? So he rubs his eyes, shakes his head, and looks again? Well, I'm pretty sure that's what I did. Jake bore only a passing resemblance to his former self. He wasn't wearing his glasses, so either he couldn't see or he was finally wearing those contact lenses his parents were begging him to get. His clothes were all new and actually fit, and he moused up his hair to the point where it would have made a porcupine jealous. He looked good. Hannah, on the other hand, looked like she always looked. Perfect. Everybody turned to stare as the happy couple entered the cafeteria. Trailing behind them and basking in their reflected glory was Teddy Spivero, Hannah's shallow end of the gene pool twin brother. Teddy surveyed the crowd until he found what he was looking for. Me! Yo, Jerko Jackson! He bellowed using a beloved nickname I hadn't heard since fourth grade. He pointed at Jake and his sister. Check it out! Still going strong! Timmy nudged my shoulder. He was a nudger and turned to me with a jealous look on his face. Are they still going out? He wasn't so much asking me as asking the universe how a thing like this could happen. I could feel the universe shrug in response. It would appear so, I said testily. I was a little annoyed at him. What right did he have to be jealous? He'd dated her for about 7 hours, whereas I'd loved her for about 7 years. Teddy bounded over to us like a Saint Bernard who'd had too much caffeine. Peoples! Did Teddy Spivero just say peoples? He elbowed me right in the stomach. He was an elbower. I bet you thought it wouldn't last more than a minute, huh? Well, look at the two of them now. Getting ready to hit the dance floor and do a little bit of the old ookie ookie. Ookie ookie? Peoples? Say what you will about Teddy Spivero, which is that he is an idiot. He had apparently come up with his own language, and I had to admit, it had a certain style. I couldn't be more happy for them, I said, trying to sound happy for them. Jake brought Hannah over, supposedly, to say hello, but really, to take a sort of victory lap. Hey, Charlie Joe, he said, while trying to drape his arm around Hannah's shoulders, but only reaching the middle of her back. How's it going? Hey, Timmy. Hey, Pete. We all mumbled something that sounded kind of like, hey, Jake. Jake looked at me. You are right. People from very different cliques can thrive together if only given the chance. Hannah looked at me. You are so smart sometimes, Charlie Joe Jackson. It's nice to be smart, I said dumbly. Remember back in a previous chapter when Jake was happy with the idea of going to the dance solo because if he went with a girl, he would have felt tied down and wouldn't have been able to go get a drink or hang out with his friends whenever he wanted? Yeah, well, it turns out he didn't end up talking to his friends barely at all, and he didn't make it to the punch bowl very often. And you know what? He didn't seem all that devastated about it. Pete's idea, dancing with everybody in a big clump, turned out to be totally fun. We spent most of the night jumping up and down with pretty much the entire grade. Just a bunch of kids together, boys and girls, having a blast, putting the stress and pressure of another school year behind us. At one point, during the heat of the moment, I actually had a weird feeling that I was going to miss school. That was pretty creepy. Then came the song where the girls are supposed to ask the boys to dance. Everyone was pairing off, and I saw Eliza heading over to me. It occurred to me that there were worse things in the world than dancing with the prettiest girl in school. Hey, Charlie Joe. Hey, Liz. She flipped her hair a few times. I just wanted you to know that even though you never ended up asking me to the dance, I'm not mad, but even so, I won't be asking you to dance because you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him eat. I looked at her. I think it's you can't make him drink. You know, since it's water. She squinted, considering the possibility. Whatever, she said, and she meant it. Chapter 29. As Eliza departed, Katie arrived. What was that about? Oh, you know, the usual, I said. She likes me, I don't like her, but somehow I'm the one who ends up standing there alone like a doofus. Well, does the doofus want to dance? Katie always knew just what to say. I looked at her gratefully. I thought you'd never ask. It was one of those Coldplay songs that's neither fast nor slow, so we just kind of looked at each other and shuffled back and forth. Did you have a good year? She asked. She didn't mess around. She always went straight for the big questions that were far too complicated for someone like me to answer. Pretty good, I said. I was watching Jake and Hannah dance. They were in their own little world, and no one else was invited. Pretty good, she echoed. What does that mean? Did you grow? Did you learn anything? Or are you still the same Charlie Joe Jackson that I usually find adorable but sometimes find impossible? What? I answered distractedly. She saw me staring at Jake and Hannah, rolled her eyes, and sighed. This whole thing was your idea. Don't forget, she said, as if I could ever forget. I know, and it worked like a charm, I said glumly. I'm a genius. Be happy for them, she said in her wise, I'm going to be a therapist someday voice. You can be shocked, you can be confused, and you can be a little freaked out. But try to be just a little bit happy for them. Can you do that? I looked at her and thought for a second. Want to get some punch? A couple of sweaty hours later, Phil Manning and Celia Barbarossa came in second in the voting for King and Queen of the Dance. I was really happy for them. They were a perfectly normal couple except for the fact that they'd been going out since fourth grade. Were completely devoted to each other, and everyone was pretty sure they'd get married and live happily ever after. Guess which couple came in first? I'll give you a hint. One's a goddess and one's taking ninth grade algebra. I was somewhat less happy for them. In our school, the two top couples get to make a little speech. It was a year-end dance tradition. Did I ever mention I officially hate traditions? Phil and Celia gave a lovely speech all about the sanctity of their love, whatever that means, thereby proving beyond a shadow of a doubt that they were way too emotionally mature for the rest of us. Then it was Hannah and Jake's turn. Hannah took the microphone first, caressing it like she was an American Idol finalist about to do a deeply emotional interpretation of Aerosmith's Walk This Way. Jake and I stand before you as an example of how opposites attract and how you can never predict who will end up liking whom, she purred, making googly eyes at her dork-turned dreamboat. Like the Beatles once said, the love you make is equal to the love you take, she added, probably unaware that she was reminding me I had given up not one but two things, any shot at her love and my most precious material possession. She handed the mic to Jake and bent down. She was 3 inches taller than him to give him a kiss on the cheek. Timmy and I both touched our own cheeks involuntarily. My name is Jake Katz, Jake said in that way that made you realize he was going to go on for a while. I have never had a girlfriend. I do really well in school, but I'm not really that popular or anything. I suddenly got a weird feeling in my stomach. Jake was being honest, very honest, too honest. I tried to convince myself that I was perfectly happy. I told myself I would be a famous writer someday, and when I was rich and successful, I'd have all the girls in the world, and everything would be fantastic. He reached up to adjust his glasses, momentarily forgetting that he wasn't wearing them. But really, I was just kind of fooling myself because actually, I was pretty lonely. Uh-oh. I could tell he was being emotional and not thinking. So when Charlie Joe Jackson told me about his idea to fix me up with Hannah, I didn't get it, he said next. One cat officially out of the bag. All eyes turned on me. My eyes turned to the fire exits in case I would need one. Jake continued, he's my friend, but I couldn't help but think that maybe it was some kind of cruel joke. You know, kind of like that movie, Carrie. Wow, interesting example there, dude. Have you ever seen Carrie? The unbelievably scary movie where the loser girl with supernatural powers is picked on by all the kids in her grade and is set up with the popular boy as a practical joke until she gets her revenge by burning them all to death at the year-end dance. Suddenly, everybody was looking for the fire exits. Jake looked at Hannah, and for one brief, wonderful moment, I thought maybe he wouldn't have the nerve to continue. Then she smiled at him, and off he went. But then, when Charlie Joe explained about his position paper and how he wanted to prove that cliques were wrong and could be overcome, I was glad to be part of his noble experiment. And I wanted to find out if the most popular girl and the dorkiest kid in the grade could find true happiness together, too. Then Jake looked directly at me, and suddenly, for some strange reason, I knew exactly what was about to happen. I knew that I would be powerless to stop it, that I would just have to let it happen. No fire exits, no hole in the ground to crawl into, no nothing. But it wasn't until Charlie Joe asked me to read his books for the position paper for him, Jake said, sealing my fate, that I realized just how deeply entrenched cliques were in our society. It seemed like the room went dead silent right then. Except for the sound of my heart pounding, of course, which was deafening. Every school has them, and it seems like every school is powerless to stop them, Jake said, getting more passionate by the second. So if somehow I could be just a small part in ending the cliques in our small corner of the world, then I would have done something really, really cool. Then Jake took his girlfriend's hand, and even though I knew my life as I knew it was about to end, I couldn't help but be a little bit touched. So we started going out, Jake said, raising his voice to be heard over the increasing din. And 3 days ago, Hannah Spivero kissed me in front of the whole world. Jake raised his arms to heavens as if to say thank you. Hannah Spivero! A lot of kids missed his second Hannah Spivero, which was as pure a declaration of love as you'll ever hear, because the room had exploded in a lollapalooza of sound, and everywhere I looked, kids were pointing at me and laughing. Pete Milano elbowed me in the ribs. You are so screwed, he said helpfully. I felt like I was having one of those out-of-body experiences, which sounds kind of cool, but in this case, most definitely was not. I looked around, hoping for a friendly face, and I caught a quick glimpse of Katie and Ms. Farrell. Their faces didn't look friendly. They looked crushed. That made me feel bad. Then I saw Mr. Radonsky heading over to my table. That made me feel worse. Meanwhile, Jake was still up on the stage, confused. Of course he had no idea what he had just said. He had no idea that he had just ruined my life. It wasn't his fault. He was in love. He was caught up in the moment. I was just caught, period. When Jake uttered the fateful words, "But it wasn't until Charlie Joe asked me to read his books for the position paper for him," the only one in the whole building who wasn't surprised was Timmy. Timmy, who had been my co-conspirator for years. Timmy, the only one who knew what I was up to. The one, in fact, who had helped me refine the plan when it was just a dream in my head, nudged me one last time just as Mr. Radonsky reached for my arm. "Dude, you probably should have just read the books," he said. Chapter 30. The second to last thing I remember from that night was catching Katie's eye as I left the dance. She was waving goodbye sadly, as if she wasn't going to see me again for a long time, which was pretty much true. And the very last thing I remember was Mr. Radonsky escorting me out of the cafeteria just as the music kicked back in. "I Wanna Rock and Roll All Night" by Kiss. "Dang it, I love this song," said Mr. Radonsky as we headed out, as if he needed another reason to hate me. Part 6. Almost Home. Chapter 31. Oh. I've been grounded before, and I'll be grounded again. This time I would probably be grounded for 6 years. But as we all know, the good thing about being grounded is that it never really lasts that long. I mean, you can get grounded for longer and longer periods of time. You can even get grounded for life. But when you think about it, the average grounding really only lasts approximately 5.5 days, because by then, everybody is pretty much sick of you hanging around the house whining all the time. I was already planning on being as whiny as possible. Chapter 32. I was waiting in the gym for my parents to pick me up from the dance when Mr. Radonsky showed me his tattoo. "See this?" he said, rolling back his right shirt sleeve to reveal a large, bald eagle smoking a cigar. "I got this baby in the service. Took me 6 hours. Getting that tattoo was by far the most painful thing I've ever had to endure in my life." He leaned in close enough for me to recognize the brand of tomato sauce he'd had for dinner. "But that pain is going to feel like walking on a bed of marshmallows compared to what all I'm going to put you through in my class next year." "I love you too, Mr. Radonsky." I was trying to figure out how to convince my parents to move to another state when, lo and behold, they walked through the door. My dad is one of those guys who never loses his temper, but when he does, look out. And every great once in a while, he gets so mad that you feel it even before he says a word. This was one of those times. I could tell he was trying not to blow when he came through the door. His eyes were very narrow, and his body was kind of hunched over, and I could tell that what he felt most, more than anger or disappointment or frustration, was shame. "Hi, I'm James Jackson," he said to Mr. Radonsky, and they shook hands. "I want to thank you for looking after my son, and I apologize for whatever trouble he's caused you tonight." "No problem," Mr. Radonsky said, giving no indication that he'd put the fear of God in me about 38 seconds earlier. "Hi, Bill," my mom said as she walked through the door. She knew Mr. Radonsky because she had subbed at our school a few times over the years. She smiled warmly at him, which was pretty impressive considering there was a tear in her eye. "Nice to see you again, Claire," Mr. Radonsky said, also smiling like he was about to tell her that I was the greatest kid in the world. My dad sat down next to me and just looked at me for what felt like 10 years. Then he slowly shook his head. "Let's go home," he said. And we went home. At first, I felt terrible. That night, as expected, I was grounded indefinitely, which was fine by me because there wasn't anybody I particularly wanted to see. I had to give up my cell phone, which was also fine by me because there wasn't anybody I particularly wanted to text or talk to. I had to give up my computer, which was fine by me because, well, you get the idea. I spent that entire weekend in my room staring at the walls, looking back on everything that had happened, trying to figure out if I was a horrible person. Eventually, I came to the conclusion that I wasn't a completely horrible person, and I felt a lot better. I was definitely a careless person, possibly a lazy person, although we all know it takes a lot of work to avoid reading. And maybe I was a slightly scheming person. But horrible? Come on! Remember, I knew horrible. I knew Teddy Slavero. And yeah, I did some dumb things. I put Jake Katz in a bad position where he did something he wasn't supposed to do, and it was quite possible he would get in a little trouble, but that's a small price to pay for Hannah Spavero looking you in the eyes and saying, "I really, really like you." And yeah, Jake read all the books for me, but I memorized his notes and wrote the whole presentation and had the idea for the grand finale with all the drama and announcements and stuff. Come on, that was pretty original, you gotta admit. Don't get me wrong, I still felt bad, but I was done beating myself up. What good would it do? And it's not like I'm the only kid in all of recorded history who ever tried to get away with something. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, it's exactly that kind of good old-fashioned creativity that's made America the great nation it is today. Suddenly, I wanted my cell phone back, and my computer, and my video games. But I wouldn't see any of them again until I went back to school. Next year. By Sunday night, I felt a different kind of terrible. I'd moved on from the "I'm a horrible person" kind of terrible to the "man, this summer is going to stink" kind of terrible. Monday was yearbook signing day for the entire student body, minus one. Guess who was the one? I guess now's as good a time as any to introduce you to Mrs. Sleep, the principal of our school. I kid you not, that is her name. You know that saying that helps you tell the difference between principal and principal, P-L-E? The principal is your pal. Well, whoever invented that saying never met Mrs. Sleep. It's not that she was a mean, awful person. It's just that she was really old-fashioned. She was so old-fashioned that even the teachers called her Mrs. Sleep. She was so old-fashioned that her first name, which nobody ever used, was Enid. She was tall and smelled a little dusty and looked kind of like Eleanor Roosevelt on a bad hair day. But most importantly, she had a huge scary chair behind a huge scary desk in a huge scary office. And right at that moment, she was sitting in that very chair, staring down at me. I was as prepared as I could be. I knew Timmy and Katie had been to the principal's office earlier that day, and I figured they were kind of like the appetizers. I was the main course, and the main course was sitting in the chair on the other side of Mrs. Sleep's desk, ready to be devoured. It felt like I was squeezed into one of my sister's dollhouse chairs she used to play with back when she was into dollhouses. Ms. Farrell was there, too. She did the talking while Mrs. Sleep just stared down at me like a disapproving owl. I knew how disappointed Ms. Farrell was in me, so I couldn't really look her in the eye. She cleared her throat nervously. Why was she nervous? It was my funeral, not hers. "I want you to know that your friends are very loyal to you," Mrs. Farrell began, "and they shared the following information with Mrs. Sleep and myself very reluctantly." That was nice to know. I was sure that at some point in the very, very distant future, I would learn to appreciate it. "According to Timothy McGibney, you and he have had an arrangement for several years in which you buy him snacks in the cafeteria and he reads your assigned books in order to tell you what's in them." She waited for a response. I had none, so she continued. "And according to Catherine Friedman, you were famous for reading as little as possible. In fact, you were quite proud of it and carried it around as a sort of badge of honor." Ouch, that one left a mark. For a split second, I couldn't believe I'd been betrayed by my friends, but in the next second, I realized I couldn't really blame Timmy or Katie for spilling the beans. After all, they had been sitting in the same chair that I was sitting in right now, and short of reading the collected works of Mark Twain, I can't think of a scarier situation. Looking at some sort of report, Mrs. Sleep asked Ms. Farrell, "And what of Jacob Katz? Has he confirmed what he said at the dance, that he read Mr. Jackson's books for the position paper in exchange for a date with Hannah Spavero?" That wasn't technically true. It wasn't that he had to read the books in order to go out with Hannah. It just seemed that way now. But it was too late. The damage was done. Mrs. Sleep was looking at me like I was a kitten killer. Or worse. And then Ms. Farrell did a strange thing. First she paused. Then she said, "In fact, Jacob Katz has retracted what he said and is now denying that Charlie Joe Jackson ever asked him to do any such thing. In fact, Jacob said the whole thing was his idea." Wait, what? At that very moment, I officially decided that Jake Katz, book reader, miracle baseball catchmaker, contact lens wearer, hair mouser, was 100% worthy of Hannah's love. Mrs. Sleep looked at me over her reading glasses. "Well, Charles Joseph, is Mr. Katz telling the truth, or is he protecting you? Do you care to enlighten us?" I took probably the deepest breath of my life. Then I did something that goes against every bone of my body, every fiber of my being, every ounce of my personality, and against everything that has made me the remarkable person I am today. I told the truth. Chapter 33. It's possible to dislike reading and still be good at writing. Just because I don't like to read doesn't mean I can't write. In fact, I'm a pretty solid writer. For example, I'm very good at similes, metaphors, and oxymorons. Here's an example of a simile. Finding out I had to read that book was as disappointing as a rainy summer day. Here's an example of a metaphor. I slogged my way through that book in about a year. And here are some helpful oxymorons. 1. Good book. 2. Happy reader. 3. Important author. 4. Nice library. 5. Favorite bookstore. Did I mention that my parents were in the principal's office too? They weren't in very good moods. My dad had taken the day off from work, which I thought might have made him happy, but for some reason didn't. And my mom had missed yoga, which threw off her center of being and therefore made her grumpy. In any event, they were sitting in these weird little aluminum folding chairs that looked like they were left over from the time Mrs. Sleep was a student at the school. Though I had bigger things on my mind, I did take a minute to notice how ridiculous my parents looked in those chairs. After I told everyone that Jake was just covering for me and that I had, in fact, asked Jake Katz to read the books for me, and after I insisted that it was all my fault, and after I begged that Jake not be punished, which they said they would look into, after all that, they sent me to the outer office while they discussed my punishment. It was kind of like being strapped into the electric chair, then suddenly being sent to wait outside while they fixed one of the switches. I waited there for 10 minutes while several kids came in so the school secretary could sign their yearbooks. When they saw me, they acted like they felt sorry for me until they giggled. Suddenly, Ms. Farrell poked her head out of Mrs. Sleep's office. "Would you come back in here, please, Mr. Jackson?" "Mr. Jackson?" I got up with a heavy sigh and headed in behind her. "You're going to love this, Charlie Joe," she said, chuckling. I was pretty sure she was being sarcastic. I took my seat. Everyone was silent, waiting for Mrs. Sleep to speak. This was her moment. This was what she lived for. "Charles Joseph Jackson, I do hope you realize the pain you've caused not only your fellow students, but also the teachers who are trying to guide you, and your parents who love you so much," she began. I didn't buy the student pain thing. Everybody seemed to be having a pretty darn good time running around getting ready for the summer and feeling relieved they weren't me. But I did feel bad about letting down Ms. Farrell and really bad about embarrassing my parents. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for today. Hope you're in suspense. This Young at Heart program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I hope you will join us next time for Young at Heart. If you have any ideas or comments, we'd love to hear from you. I'm Lavender. Thank you for listening.
This is a public service announcement from the Massachusetts Association for the Blind. The Massachusetts Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired provides assistive technology training for persons with visual impairments. If you or a family member are interested in receiving one-on-one specialized training, please contact 617-991-7073 or email atcenter@mabcommunity.org.
WICN Public Radio is a proud partner of Audio Journal. Audio Journal provides news, information, and entertainment to visually and print-impaired residents of central Massachusetts. Audio Journal broadcasts are made possible through the use of a portion of WICN's broadcast frequency. 90.5 WICN is Worcester's only NPR affiliate and the voice of arts and culture in central Massachusetts. Visit WICN.org for more info.